Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Is that war rocket Ajax to bring back his body?
And welcome to War Rocket Ajax. It's the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you doing? It's almost your favorite day.
As of midnight tonight, it will be 4:20, but right now we're recording episode 399 of War Rocket Ajax. That's right, everybody. We're holding the line at 399.
And that means that we have a 66 2/3% chance of winning a sacrifice. Because you see, Joe, the numbers don't lie. Matt, what are we doing this week on the show here?
We're doing some panel president lists. Is this our pre-hundo tradition? I don't even know what we do on the episodes before a hundo.
We just do whatever it is we were going to do anyway, which in this case is just you and me talking about comic books.
That's true. I do think we're going to do something special for number 400. We've got some ideas in mind, and those will be super fun. But number 399 is going to be super fun, too. Before we get to those panel president lists, Chris, and if you don't know what panel president is, just you wait for all the excitement that's coming.
Matt from the past is going to explain it to you.
I sure am. But before we get to that, Chris, we've got some business to take care of, starting by talking a little bit about Patreon.
That's right, Matt. If you want to support the show, head down to the bus stop, but don't take the bus this time. This time, get your phone out, get a Lyft, and you plug in 399 Gimmick Street, and you, when you get there, just go onto patreon.com and give us as little as a dollar a month so that we can keep these increasingly esoteric bits that we do on the show going.
Just wait till we get to 420 Giving Street. Just wait.
I know what's going to be waiting for me there. It's Matt Wilson. Matt, do we have anybody new to thank from our Patreon this week?
We do not. We had a few edited pledges come through this week. Ups and downs, but nothing brand new. Which means that if you want to contribute to us, what we're doing here on War Rocket Ajax, you will be one of a select few that I will read out on the next episode, possibly on Ajax 400. So if that sounds like something cool, head over to patreon.com/War Rocket Ajax. As Chris mentioned, throw in as little as $1 per month to help us keep the show going, and you'll get stuff like ad-free episodes of the show in a very specific, very special Patreon feed that is just yours. You will get stuff like bonus audio if you are above a certain level. You'll get stuff like line-stepping privileges for the stuff we do, like panel president on this very episode, and a lot more. So if that sounds cool to you, jump on over to patreon.com and help us out.
What I would love for episode 400 of this show is if I could read out the names of 400 new Patreon backers.
Make it happen, everybody. Make it happen. All right, Chris, now that we've done that, it's time for some checks and wrecks. Chris, what are you checking in with this week?
Matt, I'll tell you up front, I am not doing anything new. So we're going to talk about some things that I have probably talked about before. That I have been enjoying. In fact, I'm sure I've talked about both of these things. I wrote an article on The Legend of Zelda for SVG.com just the other day. Things in Zelda you only notice as an adult, which gave me the opportunity to do some really fun stuff about how Hyrule's economy is, it's Calvin Ball. It is a smoke and mirrors show.
Hey, Chris, I not to interrupt you, but I just wrote a rap about your life. Do you want to hear it?
Please do.
Here it goes. Well, I was writing for SVG. Well, I was writing for SVG just the other day. That's literally all I had. It was that very dumb gag, and I couldn't even do it. So I'm going to stop trying.
Sounds like you've got some more editing to do this week.
I think I might leave it in. Hear my failure, everybody.
Hey, as they say on the campaign podcast, a podcast I'm a big fan of, experience the failure, live in the failure, and let the failure make you better.
Yes, indeed. All right, please go on about your Zelda article.
So it gave me the opportunity to think a lot about Breath of the Wild. So I jumped back in, new playthrough with the DLC of The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Now, Matt, I never finished this game the first time around. I loved it. It was like probably my game of the year 2017, I believe. But I never finished because I didn't want to go fight Ganon until I got all the shrines. And then I got tired of doing all the shrines. Uh-huh. So this time it's going to be different.
So this time you're doing it.
This time I'm doing it. I'm going all the way through. I'm going all the way tonight. No regrets, just love. But I had a problem in that Link would sometimes just start walking around by himself, which is not good. So I ended up calling Nintendo customer service, and I had a very good customer service experience. They really helped me out on this. And a thing that I found out, because I saw on Twitter when I was checking in not too long ago, somebody mentioned that they had found an old NES and they called the number on it. And the person who answered, like, helped them get the NES up and running. I called, and then I found out that the reason you can do that is because Nintendo's customer service number has been the same for 38 years.
Yeah, I mean, what's the point in changing it?
Yeah. So if you've, like, every Game Boy, every NES, every Super Nintendo, every Wii, they all have that number. And apparently they are willing to do tech support on all of them. I am not telling you to go make trouble for the good people in Nintendo customer service, but it's nice to know that you can if you find a Game Boy.
Yeah, if you found a Game Boy in the street and you called the number, they'd be like, let's get this thing working. Let's do it.
Ooh, looks like you're out of warranty, though, on that Game Boy you found in the street. Matt, what are you up to this week?
Well, this is a check about a wreck.
Oh, is that allowed?
Well, it's a WRECK wreck.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Matt, you worked me.
I did. I worked you into a shoot. So basically, one was had, and as a result, car buying is going to occur. So I'm going to be going to a car dealership pretty much on the day this episode goes up and purchasing a car, not a new car, a used car. And yeah. We'll see what happens.
You should probably say everyone's okay.
Everyone is fine. Yes. But it was one of those totaled car situations. And I got to say, I was more than anticipating like getting virtually nothing back for the car that got totaled. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised that like, I essentially got the actual value of the car in the total loss settlement. So I can actually buy a decent car with what I'm going to be getting.
Well, that's fantastic, Matt. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Rare that one of these things shakes out for me, but
that means both of us will have gotten new cars in a pretty quick amount of time.
Not going to be getting another one probably anytime soon. I'll be keeping my other car for the foreseeable future. But yes, everybody is fine except a rabbit that unfortunately jumped out in the road. But otherwise, everyone is fine. And yeah, I'll update everybody on what is happening in Car Town.
Matt, can I make a suggestion?
I would love to hear it.
You can get a Barris Batmobile.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I don't know if you know that. Like, you can.
Yes. Like, I could go up to Jerry Lawler and be like, hey, can I buy your Batmobile?
I mean, people will custom make them.
Right.
And look, I'm sure there's got to be a used one out there somewhere. I'm sure someone has bought a Batmobile and they're like, hang on, I'm not living that life. I should give this to somebody who wants to live that life.
You know, you're not wrong, and I do want to live that life. So it's either a Barris Batmobile or a Toyota Camry or Corolla. So I'll let you know either way.
I'm just saying, Matt, we've got a road trip coming up.
We do.
That's all. That's all.
You know what? You are not incorrect about that. And speaking of that road trip, we should mention that as part of that, we're going to be not only performing, doing a live episode of this show at the Columbus Podcast Festival on Friday, May 11th. We're also going to be signing at Comic Town in Columbus the following day, Saturday, May 12th. So if you are in the Columbus area, buy tickets for the podcast festival and then come see us at Comic Town.
Yeah, and it would be really nice to see some people out there. Like, even if you can't make it to the podcast festival, which we hope you can always come see us signing some comics.
I don't know the exact hours of the Comic Town signing, but they will be in the afternoon. I think we'll be there for a good little stretch. So when we know the exact hours, we will report those. But more than likely, if you stop down by Comic Town on that day, we'll be around. With that, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
Well, this is another thing that I know that we have talked about previously on a couple of occasions. I rewatched Spider-Man Homecoming tonight because it is now available if you've got the old Stars channel on Amazon Prime.
Sure.
Guess what's still pretty good?
You talking about SMH?
I'm talking about SM:H, The Adventures of Peter Parker and His Buddy the Man in the Chair.
Those are your guys.
Yeah. That movie's really good. It made me cry again at the exact same spot. I'll tell you, that's always going to work. It is 100% always going to work on me when he looks at his own reflection and says, "Come on, Spider-Man."
I mean, it's always great when he does the thing.
It's always great when he does the thing. I love it. It's so good. But, you know, like, that movie is so well-structured and so well-done and paced well and true to the characters in a way that I got to appreciate going in and watching it for the second time tonight. Like, the twist with the Vulture, right, is great.
Yes.
But a thing I didn't realize until I saw it the second time, the first thing that movie tells you is that Adrian Toomes has a kid.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, because he sees the like, he's looking at the crayon drawing that his kid makes. And that's a pretty, like, that's how good reveals work. Good reveals set themselves up. They don't just come out of nowhere. And it's such a good movie. If you've not rewatched it, go back and rewatch Spider-Man Homecoming. I still think it's my favorite of the entire MCU, for sure.
It's up there for me. I don't think it's my number one, but it's certainly up there in the faves. No doubt.
But yeah, that's all I've got. I have not been doing anything new this week, I'm afraid, everybody. Matt, how about you?
My recommendation is going to be actually a series of YouTube videos that you can watch. For whatever reason, I've been spending more and more time just like, when I have some downtime at work, just popping over to YouTube and watching, you know, stuff that's there that is fun to watch and that would preferably come in series format so that when one video is over, I can watch the next one. And one series that I have been keeping up with that is very fun is a series of videos on the Bon Appetit YouTube channel called It's Alive with Brad.
I believe we've talked about this before.
Not on the show. We've talked about it like pre-show.
Did we just talk about that on a conversation we had that we did not record for public consumption?
That's right, yes. So this is hosted by a guy named Brad Leone. Every episode is based around some kind of food item that is either alive when you make it because of like yeast or some other kind of like living material in it. Like he makes kombucha in the first episode. He makes a few different kinds of bread that use yeast, stuff like that. But also like he will go on like excursions, investigate like how living food is harvested. Like he goes oyster fishing, for example, or in the newest episode, he goes and fishes for crabs in Alaska. And it's all, oh, he does one episode, maybe my favorite episode in the whole series. And there are like 28 episodes now. Maybe my favorite episode in the whole series is when he goes and makes salt. Cause
oh, interesting.
You learn so much about how like really good sea salt gets made. There's also one where he learns about all about how chocolate gets made, because you would never know it, but chocolate has to be fermented.
Interesting.
And if you get just like a pod of cocoa beans off of a tree, that stuff that's in there doesn't taste like chocolate at all. It doesn't even look like chocolate. It has to be fermented and dried, and it's a very like precise process of turning it into what we know as chocolate. And if it's out too long, it dries out and is extremely bitter. And if it's not out long enough, it's you know, almost like sour tasting. It just, it has to get to the perfect place to be chocolate. And then he goes to the actual processing plant in San Francisco. He goes to Ecuador for the chocolate beans, for the cocoa beans. And then he goes to San Francisco for the actual processing of the chocolate. It's all really interesting stuff. Like all your, oh, interesting reactions are exactly dead on. Also, the host is just this really like ebullient, funny guy who kind of plays up being a bit of a dumb guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like he kind of acts like a little bit of like a meathead dumb guy. And it seems like he's sort of playing that up a little bit. He's also got this very identifiable Philly accent, which maybe had to have to pause one of the videos and be like, hey, Marlene, this guy's from Philly, right?
Or is he drinking water?
He says water all the time. And the so part of the fun of the show is he's constantly talking to his cameraman, whose name is Vinny. It's almost like a real Ernest and Vern kind of situation.
Okay.
Because we never see Vinny, and Vinny never really talks, but he's constantly talking to Vinny. And Vinny responds to Brad mostly like in post-production.
Okay.
So like little graphics will come up on the screen to respond to the stuff that Brad is saying, or to like anytime he says water, a phonetic spelling of water will come up on the screen. So it's like this mix of really interesting stuff about how food gets made, plus like funny stuff. And the host is really like a funny guy who's clearly like, even though he works for Bon Appetit, he's like anything but pretentious. If any of that sounds interesting to you, and if you're into watching food videos on YouTube like I am, you should definitely check out It's Alive with Brad.
Also, he makes a knife one time.
He does make a knife one time.
And you know that is, that's the content we crave.
It sure is. All right, Chris, those are our checks and recs. Let's talk about some comics. Well, Chris, it was a milestone week in comic books, but before we get to the big milestone, before we get to the monster issue, let's talk about another really, really great comic that came out this week, Mr. Miracle number 8.
Yeah, I don't think we talked about Mr. Miracle number 7,
which
when
is
it came out.
The Birth of Jacob.
The Birth of Jacob? Or Jack the Genius?
Yeah.
Little Genius Jack, as Funky Flashman calls him. Would you believe I am so used to Jack Kirby only being called Jack that it took me until this issue to get it.
To get that he's named after Jack Kirby?
To get that he's named after Jack Kirby.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I sometimes, if it's not obvious, I'll miss it. That's all.
Shit with the Furies in the hospital, mwah, mwah.
Yeah, the blending of domestic stuff and like even like kind of sitcom-y stuff with big cosmic war between Apocalypse and New Genesis stuff in this comic is choice. It is so good and so well done. And that's done really well in this issue as well.
Yeah,
because
this one is less of a like injecting Apocalypse into day-to-day life kind of story. because this one has a literal like back and forth storytelling structure between Mr. Miracle at home taking care of little Jacob with Funky Flashman and Mr. Miracle actually on the battlefront doing battle.
Yeah, he and Barda are alternating days. So one day one of them will go out to the front and the other will stay with the kid and they alternate, which is a brilliant structure for like getting to what is really making this book work. And boy does it work. I loved the part in this issue where Mr. Miracle has to fight Kanto.
Yes.
because Barda challenged Kanto to a one-on-one duel to the death.
Or something about like the, if whoever lost, the, like their army would surrender?
Their army would withdraw.
That withdraw, okay. And Barda, yeah, Barda didn't schedule it right.
Mm-hmm.
So Mr. Miracle is the one there on that day. That
yeah.
Somebody has to fight Kanto.
Kanto, that's Darkseid's personal assassin. That's Kanto 13. You know about Kanto 13.
Oh, yeah.
You know how he got his job?
Please tell me.
He killed Kanto 12.
He sure did. Kanto being Darkseid's personal assassin, he wins. And
yeah, he just beats the shit out of Scott-Free.
And then, as Mr. Miracle is being carted away from the battlefield on a stretcher, he's talking with Barda about, like, remodeling the apartment.
Yeah. They're talking about how they need to get their kid to sleep, and they're thinking about just bringing in the car seat because he always sleeps in the car.
That's right.
It's really good, man. Like, it's a really good comic book, is what it is.
Yeah, it's this great mixture of highs and lows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you really feel the highs and lows that Scott and Barda are experiencing.
Yeah.
Also, I think we have to talk about the gag from the previous issue where checking into the hospital, Scott-Free tells the nurse that Big Barda's first name is Big and last name is Barda.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's very good. It's a very good comic.
What a good comic.
Yeah. I'm loving it. I have no doubt that it will, but I do really hope that it is able to just stick this landing all the way to the finish line. And again, no reason to think it won't, and I cannot wait to see where this book goes. Also, a little bit in last issue, definitely, not in this week's, but in last week's, definitely gets pretty close to my theory about what's really going on.
I'm very curious as to what we'll find out. I'm also, like, it's amazing to me that this series has gone 8 full issues with only showing us basically a glimpse of Darkseid.
Mm-hmm.
When we get full on, like, Darkseid confrontation, it's gonna be the result of, like, this bit-by-bit build. Yeah. And I'm very excited for it.
It is certainly a comic that is willing to take its time with its build in a way that a lot of stories aren't.
Yeah.
And as much as I appreciate and as much as I like genuinely enjoy writing and reading stories that are just all out start to finish, this has been a joy to see, like, all the slow burn elements, all the fast stuff too, like Barda being pregnant and then Barda giving birth and all the female furies in the waiting room. Like, even in this issue alone, like, there's a lot of movement. Like, Jack Miracle, I guess is his full name. Jack Barda Miracle. Jack Barda Free.
Yeah, Free.
Like, I mean, he's not, like, a toddler yet, but he says his first word, which is pretty, like, I would say, like, maybe a year passes in this issue.
Well, I mean, we already had 9 months pass between, what, like, issue 5 and issue 7?
Very true.
If female furies have the same gestation period as human women, which I would assume they do.
There's not a lot of reasons to assume they don't, but yes.
If you haven't been reading it, catch up. All right, now that we've talked about that, it's time to talk about the milestone. It's time to talk about Action Comics number 1000.
I really wish we were talking about a milestone comic, because I've been reading Icon lately. That shit's good.
Icon is super good. But along those lines, I feel like Action Comics 1000 has more hits than misses. It's a big anthology comic. It comes with with 8 different covers, actually 9 different covers, covering every decade of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Most of which are absolutely gorgeous. I really love the Michael Cho 1940s cover.
Especially. Yes, extremely good.
But all the covers are really good. Do you want to just go story by story through this?
Yeah, but I will say this. This is Action Comics 1000. That's a big deal. There have been 1,000 issues of Action Comics, and Superman's been in all of them. That's huge. But I do wish this story was less of a celebration and more of a comic book. I wish that, something happened in this issue, which I guess it kind of does with Bendis' arrival, but I wish more of this issue was a Superman story instead of stories about Superman, if that makes sense. And I know that I'm being a real grumpus about it. So just take that with a grain of salt, but I do wish that was the case.
Okay. Well, we can kind of get more granular about it as we go through each one. Starting with Dan Jurgens' story, kicking us off, written and drawn by Dan Jurgens. Called From the City That Has Everything. It is very much a celebration of Superman story about the city of Metropolis honoring Superman in a big ceremony and Superman being distracted the whole time, thinking that these evil aliens are about to attack.
The Kund.
And then we realize that all the other superheroes have been keeping them at bay so he can have one moment of being appreciated.
Yes.
Which I think was a sweet story. It is a sweet story.
It really is. I like the idea. I like at the end when all the other superheroes show up and they're like, hey Superman, we want to do this nice thing for you. We love you. Again, I feel like such a crabapple. I do wish it was a show where Superman was doing cool stuff instead of everybody telling you that Superman does cool stuff. But other than that, beyond that, I think it's good. I think it's well done. I think it's actually does a decent job with its emotional content. I also think it's interesting and wild that Dan Jurgens still on that book. And I'm not saying recently, I'm saying from 24 years ago.
Yeah. Also, there's one particular story in here that I want to point out that's about a gang member, a guy that ultimately ends up being a henchman for Skull, and mm-hmm. Superman helps him turn his life around.
Yes.
That's the kind of Superman shit I am here for.
If I was going to pick one of these stories out and say this is what this issue should have been, I would have loved to see that guy's various encounters with Superman over the years, because I think that would have satisfied both needs, because we would have gotten to see Superman through all these different eras doing stuff and ultimately helping this guy out, because I think that's a really good idea, and it's just not enough in this issue.
Yeah.
Or in this particular story.
I have one key question. Mm-hmm. I believe every story in this issue ends with not Finn, not end, but Finny.
Uh-huh. Does it?
Certainly this one does. I think at least one other ends with Finny.
That's weird.
What is with that choice?
It is a choice. It's a weird one.
I don't get it, but maybe somebody can explain it to me. The next story in here is a Superman retrospective. So the premise is, it's actually a pretty clever premise. The premise is that Vandal Savage is basically Superman making Superman go back through 80 years of history. It's Return of Bruce Wayne – but it's Superman. Vandal Savage is making it happen. And each page, which is a splash page, is a different decade.
Yeah. And it's not a different decade. It's a different era of Superman that you remember.
Yeah.
Because he's got like the Bronze Age stuff and Silver Age stuff, but he's also got, I think there's three in the 80s. Because there's kind of a Kurt Swan page and a Dark Knight Returns page, which is weird. Not a Superman story, but okay. And then like a Byrne style page. So
yeah.
it hits all the Superman that you like.
Yeah, we get Superman Returned from Death, that version of Superman. Weirdly, we don't have Electric Blue Superman in here, but Kingdom Come Superman gets
travesty. Travesty. That is part one of the travesty. I will get to the other part of the travesty in a moment.
That said, okay, so this story is written by Pete Tomasi, who's been doing Superman stuff for quite a few years now, mm-hmm. and has art by Patrick Gleason, who, say what you will about the story here, the Pat Gleason art is fucking incredible.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, it is knock it out of the park great art. Like, if there's like one key reason to buy Action Comics 1000, it's for the art showcase in here.
Yeah, you really do get to see a lot of really good artists doing some Superman stuff, which is great.
But Patrick Gleason is like changing up his style on every page here. The pages are beautiful. Like, it is extraordinarily well done. The one page where it's the three Supermen fighting each other is so, so good.
Yes.
And what's Travesty the Second?
We'll get to it.
Oh, so it's not in this story.
It's not in this story.
Okay. Really, really amazing art on that one, which is called Never Ending Battle. The next one is An Enemy Within, which has a script by Marv Wolfman and art by Kurt Swan. This seems to be like repurposed art?
Yeah, it's old Kurt Swan art with Marv Wolfman going in and doing a new dialogue over it, basically.
Okay.
From a story that I believe Swan did in Action Comics Weekly. I didn't check any of this. This is my slightly informed guess. And then also a page from Superman the Secret Years, which they actually mentioned, which I believe is a Schaffenberger page.
Schaffenberger, it's still Kurt Swan doing the pencils. Schaffenberger does the inks on
okay. Which, by the way, second most important, third most important Superman artist. Nobody ever talks about Kurt Schaffenberger, but he's great. One of my faves.
Yeah. This story is weird because mm-hmm. Superman's not in it. Until the very end, he's like in Japan fighting Brainiac drones.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has to like remotely stop the Brainiac drones from taking over people's brains. For what it is, to get Kurt Swan art in Action Comics 1000, you know, it does the job.
Yeah.
This one does end with end instead of Finney.
Okay.
Then we have a Paul Levitz written, Neil Adams drawn, Superman Lex Luthor story called Superman in the Game, where Superman and Lex Luthor play literal chess with each other.
I actually liked this one.
It's
because there's a lot of Lex Luthor in this.
It's fun.
I would say there should be less Lex Luthor, more Lois Lane, but you know, the character who also debuted in Action Comics number one.
This is a very 80s ass Lex Luthor, by the way.
You know I love 80s ass Lex Luthor, but yes, you are absolutely correct on that, my man.
And he tries to trap Superman in some kryptonite chains, but he got a mother box from Mr. Miracle that helped him.
I like to think that he got this mother box from, like, Tom King, Mr. Oz, Mr. Miracle, who's all sad all the time.
This one also ends with Finney. But this is the most like Superman. It's not a retrospective Superman story. It's just a short Superman versus Lex story.
Yeah.
Which is good. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay. The next one is wild. It's called The Car. It's written by Jeff Johns and Richard Donner. Olivier Coipel does the art, so it looks beautiful. And it's about the guy whose car gets smashed on the cover of Action Comics number one.
I liked the story. It was kind of exactly what I expected it to be. This idea has been done before.
Yeah.
I think it was done in Action Comics 900. Okay. They also did a story about the guy whose car it was. But it's good. I like it. It wasn't told this way. I really liked the way that Superman goes and talks to this guy whose car it is, because he's a gangster, and Superman's like, "Hey, I know your life sucks, but maybe do something good." And it's very like we've always talked about it. Geoff Johns does his best work on Superman by far.
Yeah, I mean, I love the conceit of you can fix it or you can junk it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good idea, and I'm sure that was relevant to you this week, Matt.
It sure was. I didn't have the choice, but yeah. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that story had been done before, though.
Not in that particular way, but there have been at least one other story about the guy whose car it is. And maybe the other one was about the dude who's freaking out on the cover, who's like my favorite DC Comics character of all time. That dude who's losing his mind at a man picking up a car.
Yeah.
As he should. But yeah, there have been similar ideas. Because of course there have. It's Action Comics number one. It's the most seen comic book cover ever.
Yeah. Next up we have the story by Scott Snyder and Raphael Albuquerque, The Fifth Season, which is another Superman-Lex showdown kind of story.
Again, I like this one. Unsurprisingly, I thought it was a pretty cool idea of Lex Luthor trying to cut a hole in time and like use a time scalpel and some time scissors,
yes,
to cut a hole in time and then cut Superman's entire genealogical line. That's a great Lex Luthor plot. But then accidentally finding out that Superman, like that Clark Kent as a boy saved his life. That was a really like interesting twist. It straight up is like, hey, yeah, you're Clark Kent, right? Which I was not expecting.
It's a very different take on Lex than the one in the Paul Levitz story. Like, this is a very modern Lex Luthor as opposed to the 80s ass Lex Luthor we saw before.
Yeah, this is almost like a Grant Morrison Injustice Gang. I mean, he's got a time scalpel and some time scissors.
Yeah, this is a Lex Luthor who can get like, you know, magic artifacts and do stuff with them. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, the fact that they kind of just come to not an agreement per se, but like sort of detente over, yeah, this revelation and the whole conceit of there being a fifth season between winter and spring, where you never know what's going to happen. Is pretty fun.
Yeah, I really like that idea of like, hey, sometimes weird stuff happens. Like sometimes, and the weird stuff is Lex Luthor does not use his time scalpel and time scissors to kill Superman's grandfather.
Yep. The next one is maybe the most out there idea for a story in here. It's called Of Tomorrow. Tom King is the writer. Clay Mann is doing the art on this. And this is Superman at the end of the universe, or at the end of the world, at least, where the sun is going to engulf the Earth, like, you know, 4 billion years in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Lois is apparently fine.
Yeah, because she drinks his immortality formula.
Yeah. He looks exactly like Christopher Reeve in this.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes little sculptures of his parents to memorialize them.
Yeah, I actually really liked this story too. For again, like as a let's talk about Superman in this way, the idea that Superman would be like, yeah, I know the Earth's gotta blow up because that's the way it happens, and it's 4 billion years in the future. But you know, I thought maybe I could save it. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. I'm gonna say straight up, the next story is my favorite in the whole thing.
Okay.
It's called 5 Minutes. It's by Louise Simonson and Jerry Ordway. So already I'm in it, right? Already, yeah, I'm, yeah, in it. And it's all about journalist Clark Kent.
Mm-hmm.
It's like journalist Clark Kent, he's on deadline for this story. Perry's breathing down his neck, but there's an out-of-control L train that he has to go and save. And then he immediately has to go stop a robbery after that. And so he's 2 minutes away from deadline by the time he finishes. He gets back to the office. He finishes the story in time. And then Perry's like, oh, well, that's old news. We're holding the paper for A1 because Superman just saved all these people on an L train. You gotta write about that now. And I like, it's a very old fashioned Superman, and I love that shit.
Yeah, I love that Superman gets his story done in 2 minutes on a computer. He like types super fast on a computer.
Yeah, and he's like, it's very like old fashioned journalism in what's being drawn as a new, like, as a modern newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in a newsroom with computers, and we never said we sent anything to layout.
Well, you didn't work for the Daily Planet.
That's true.
Some places still do it with integrity, Matt.
The next story, I love the art, which is by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, with inks
inked by Kevin Nolan.
Inked by Kevin Nolan, so it looks gorgeous.
Yeah, man. Hot damn.
But I don't really understand what's going on in it at all.
Okay, I can tell you exactly what's happening in this story, because I really liked it.
It's a Paul Dini story with Mr. Mrs. Pitlick.
Yeah, but you don't know it's a Mr. Mrs. Pitlick story, because what it is it's it purports to be set in the future.
Right.
Where there's an amusement park about Superman's life, which is the setup for World of Krypton, by the way. Like, the Silver Age book that kind of goes through Superman's history. But it turns out that it's Mr. Mixius Pitlick and Miskis Pintles's doing sexy role-playing, except that Mr. Mixius Pitlick's sexy role-playing is that he pretends to be a crowd of people in an amusement park, while Miskis Pintles's tells him how Superman died. But then he can never really figure out, like, how he's going to kill Superman. It's very funny.
And then Batbite is there?
Well, and then at the end of the story, he goes off to be with Miskis Pintles's, and so Batmite, the Thunderbolt, and Quisp are there, getting ready to presumably go, like, fuck around with Batman, Aquaman, and Johnny Thunder.
Yeah. I don't dislike it. I mean, the art, as we said, pristine, gorgeous, like, beautiful. But it very much reads to me as one of those, like, okay, Paul. Paul Dini stories. Next up, we have a John Cassaday, Brad Meltzer story, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Faster Than a Speeding Bullet.
Mm-hmm. Matt?
Superman flies faster than a bullet because the lady moves her head toward the gun.
Matt?
Yep.
It's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine. This is Travesty Part 2.
Okay.
That Brad Meltzer should have 5 pages in Action Comics number 1000, and John Bogdanov has 0.
I mean, that
Carl Kiesel has 0. Tom Grummett has 0. John Byrne has 0, but I understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's bullshit. It is absolute bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. Upsetting. Like, to me personally, upsetting.
That said, the story is fine.
Says you.
And then
fine.
Wrapping up the issue is maybe the worst story of the bunch, sadly. The Truth by Brian Michael Bendis and Jim Lee. Because it's all like Bendis dialogue between these two women who work at a coffee shop when Superman comes crashing through the window. One of them is the owner of the coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
Superman comes crashing through the building when, like, a big space monster punches him through the window. He's a Doomsday-ish character,
mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to say. Then Supergirl, like, flies in and attacks. The police try to take the guy down. The coffee shop people try to help Superman. Then there's a reveal that, once Superman is conscious again, that this guy, Rogel Czar, actually destroyed Krypton.
Okay. Because this is going to be Superman for the next little bit. This is going to be Bendis doing Man of Steel. presumably Rogel Czar, our new favorite bad guy, is going to be the bad guy in that.
Rogel Czar.
I'll say this. It's very Brian Michael Bendis dialogue. Right? Like, it's absolutely like, oh, he's wearing the shorts. He's wearing the shorts. When did he stop wearing the shorts? You know, it's very much that. Which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing, because you don't, you know, you don't bring in Brian Michael Bendis and then not have him be Brian Michael Bendis, yeah, you know?
I actually don't mind that part.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Again, this has been done before, and it's actually been done in Superman Earth 1. The Straczynski book that is possibly my least favorite Superman story of all time. I don't know why people keep wanting to talk about Krypton.
Well, like, here's what it boils down to for me.
Mm-hmm.
Superman talking about, like, what destroyed Krypton, or trying to, like, create a reason why Krypton blew up. Aside from Superman the Animated Series, which came up with the only reasonable way to do it,
mm-hmm.
which was the whole Brainiac tie-in.
Yes.
That, to me, is the same as trying to do something with Peter Parker's parents.
Yeah. I've said it a million times. Krypton's exploded. Like, it's done. We don't need to go back to it. Jor-El put the baby in the rocket. The end.
Yeah. Like, honestly, anybody who shows up and who's like, I destroyed Krypton. Like, Superman could just be like, well, I mean, that sucks. I never lived there.
I mean, you know, like, the thing is, it's instant, easy drama. It's like, I feel like it's the first thing you'll think of. It's like, oh, well, if Superman fights bad guys, what if there was somebody who killed an entire planet? Like, even Byrne did it with the Supergirl saga with the Phantom Zone Kryptonians. But, like, everybody they killed was on Earth.
Yeah.
Like, they killed a whole planet Earth.
I'm not excited about that. I'm not excited about that particular story. It's not that I'm not willing to give Bendis Man of Steel a chance, but if it's all about like fighting the guy who destroyed Krypton, I'm not particularly into it. And it sucks because I liked so much of the rest of this. On the whole, I really enjoyed Action Comics 1000.
I think you're right. It's got more good stuff than bad by far. And the stuff that like I didn't care for, like it has a Brad Meltzer story, but it has a Brad Meltzer story that's fine, you know?
Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine. But I just feel like issues are more fondly remembered that do stuff. We don't remember Spider-Man number 50, Amazing Spider-Man 50, because it's like it's an anniversary issue where Spider-Man talks about being Spider-Man, right? Like we remember it because it's Spider-Man No More and that story rules.
I think that's the curse of the modern anniversary issue, though. Like, if it's a big enough anniversary issue, then it's going to be a celebration issue, not a story-moving issue.
Maybe so.
All right, I think we've talked enough about it. Chris, it's time to do some panel presidents.
Let's do it.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
From the president's office in the White House.
Panel president.
Now, what is the panel president list?
Panel president. We take some listener-submitted lists and place those characters on a huge, ever-expanding master list from best to worst. We elect the best characters and we impeach the worst characters. Panel president. Yes, that was me you just heard. Explaining what panel president is. And because I came from the past to explain that to you, then you don't need me to explain it to you now, and we can just dive into a list.
Should we say that we've got a list currently of 329 characters at the top? We got our boy Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. He's amazing. He's sensational. He's adjectiveless.
You know it.
And then down at the bottom, we got a bunch of characters I don't want to talk about.
Here comes a list from line stepper Matt Jerns.
Ah, yeah, Matt Jerns of the Super Sentai Bros podcast.
He has my name.
He does have your name. Half your name.
He says that this is a list of the coolest dudes from when he was a kid, the special non-Wolverine Batman category.
Okay.
And we,
you know, I love dudes that were cool when I was a kid.
Yeah. We're kicking it off with Eric Brooks, Blade.
Blade. Okay, here's the problem. Comics Blade is not very good.
Compared to Movie Blade.
Compared to Movie Blade, yeah. But Comics Blade is not very good. He's good in certain stories, but they've never figured out how to make him work. Maybe because you can't really say motherfucker in Marvel Comics.
That is a limitation.
Yeah. Like, he's really good in Captain Britain and MI-13. I love the touch where they trap Dracula in his... They put the Black Mercy on Dracula, basically, and trap him in his greatest dream. And in his greatest dream, he has yet to kill Blade because he wants Blade out there suffering while he hunts him down. That's a pretty good touch. Like, he's really good in that. But there aren't, like... There aren't a lot of, like, really good... like Blade comic stories, you know?
Yeah, it's hard for me to think of any offhand.
And that's, you know, that's part of the deal, is we have to rank them purely based on comics. So, like, I wish we could put him higher. I really do. But I don't think he's going to do super well.
I mean, he's certainly a cool concept. It is undeniable that Blade is a cool concept.
Tim of the Daywalker?
That's the guy, man.
Well, keep in mind, that's a lot of movie stuff. Like, he doesn't become the Daywalker until after the movies.
Yeah.
Like, comics-wise, he's just a dude with wooden knives, which is still pretty cool.
Like I said, he's cool in concept. Like, vampire hunter guy. Is cool. Like, look, he was in the Midnight Suns.
He was in the Midnight Suns. You are correct.
He was up there with Hellstorm in the Midnight Suns.
talking about Ghost Rider and Blaze, the Spirits of Vengeance.
Yeah.
He knew about the Darkhold.
He sure did.
Look, he's in X-Men 92, Matt. You know I like the guy.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's not going to be, like, tip-top of the list, but I don't think he's going to be, like, at the bottom either. I think he's going to be... You know, I like him as much as possibly Iron Fist.
Oh, there's no way he's as good as Iron Fist.
Okay, where are you looking?
Again, if we're talking about mass media, then we'll flip those, reverse it. Put my thing down, flip it, and reverse it. I don't think he's as good as, like, Cheryl Blossom. Like, I don't think he's as good as Garfield, the cat.
I think putting him below Garfield might be a little much.
Okay, Spider Jerusalem's below Garfield. I would rather, you know, read a Spider Jerusalem comic.
I mean, I guess that's...
I'd rather read another issue of Transmetropolitan than a comparable issue of Blade.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is fair.
I think, like, okay, Superboy's better. Okay. Power Girl's better.
Yeah.
I think... Lord Deathman and Chamber are better. I would say where you start getting into, like, comparable stuff is, like, down here with Awesome Andy.
I mean, I think he's better than Overdrive. I think he's better than Lincoln Beetle 2. I'll leave it up to you whether Blade is better than Ultra Magnus or not.
Not in comics. Not in comics. Okay. Because, Matt, you don't know this about Ultra Magnus. He's a little guy inside a big guy.
I do know that. You have told me that before.
Matt, he's a little guy inside a big guy.
All right, let's put him between Ultra Magnus and Beetle 2.
Okay. All right, let's do that then. I would still rather read if Zariel was in a comic, that's not true. If Zariel was in a comic today and Blade was in a comic today, I would be equally excited about both. But only because of post-movie Blade.
Okay. I do get that. I do get that.
Blade, Eric Brooks, enters the list at number 210.
Next up on Matt's list is Ghost Rider, Danny Ketch.
So not Blaze, but Ghost Rider, the other half of Ghost Rider and Blaze, the Spirits of Vengeance.
You know it. You know it.
Do you know about the story where the little blind girl thinks Ghost Rider's Santa Claus?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's Danny Ketch.
Yeah, I'm. You're talking about Howard Mackey's greatest creation.
That's him. You got it. Dan Ketch isn't bad. He's not great, and he's not as good as Johnny Blaze, weirdly enough, because he's not bonded to Zarathos. He's bonded to Noble Kale.
That's right. Yes.
So, I mean, you know, you're never going to be as cool as a guy who had, like, an actual devil. A devil?
A devil.
A devil.
Get that devil out your soul.
Oh, the devils. Maybe he does have a devil. No, he's got a ghost. He's got Noble Kale.
Yeah. I mean, look, yeah, if we don't have Johnny Blaze on the list yet, but I think Johnny Blaze is going to go above Danny Ketch.
Where do you think he relates? Like, this is just where my eyes hit as I was scrolling up, because I think he's better than Comics Blade, for sure.
Okay.
Where do you think he rates in terms of, like, Eric O'Grady, Ant-Man, and Bobby Drake?
Maybe on par with Eric O'Grady, Ant-Man. I like Eric O'Grady a lot, in much the same way I like Danny. Like a different take on a character I like, but probably not as good as the original.
Because I don't think he's as good as Popeye the Sailor Man.
Okay, I can buy that.
So that's where I'm looking.
I think Hulkling's probably better. I think our big question is Iceman. Is he better or worse than Iceman?
I'm not a fan of Bobby Drake.
That's my understanding, yes.
Yeah, that's why he's at number 200 on the list right now. But I think Danny Ketch is a cool character who had a lot of potential and honestly realized a lot of potential. Like, he's still around in an interesting way.
Yeah.
Even when Johnny Blaze is Ghost Rider, like, Danny's still around because they're secret brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, I love it when people in comics have secret brothers.
Yeah.
Matt, are you caught up on Riverdale?
No, I'm not.
Somebody's got a secret brother. Multiple people actually have secret brothers on Riverdale. It's great.
Love it.
So yeah, what are we thinking here? I think he's better than Iceman, honestly. I don't think he's as good as Todd.
Okay, that's where I'll go then. Danny Ketch.
Todd the Squirrel, by the way. Yes. He's the squirrel who does meth.
Todd T. Squirrel.
He's really the Danny Ketch of Akewood.
You know, I think you're probably right.
So Ghost Rider Danny Ketch of the Midnight Suns goes into the list at number 200. God, the Midnight Suns is such a fucking cool name.
It's going to be interesting when we get Robbie Reyes, Ghost Rider, up in here.
Robbie Reyes is better than Danny Ketch.
I would agree. I like Robbie Reyes a lot.
It's wild that it took 40 years for, like, them to be like, what if Ghost Rider had a car, though?
Yeah, because he had a horse first. The original Ghost Rider had a horse.
Yeah. Talk about the Phantom Rider? That guy sucks. I don't even want to rank that dude. That's garbage.
Wait till we get to, like, classic Marvel Western heroes. All right, here we go. Next on Matt's list is Lobo, the main man.
Talking about the Bastich?
The Bastich, yes.
Matt, I got a question for you. Are you referring to the last Zarnian?
Him exactly.
I don't like Lobo.
Here's the deal. Yeah, here's what I was going to say, kind of like in hushed tones, but you've already said it. Mm-hmm. I kind of hate Lobo.
I do not like Lobo. Here's the thing. Like, here's the weird thing. Lobo's a joke, but, like, so many people took Lobo very seriously.
Lobo is a joke that ate itself.
Yeah, because he was a joke, and then Simon Bisley's clearly, like doing jokes with him, but people took it very, very seriously. That dude's in Marvel versus DC. There is no scenario that exists where Lobo needs to be in Marvel versus DC fighting Wolverine.
Yeah, definitely not. Like, Lobo got too popular for his own good. Much like any number of other characters in comics of that time, Lobo's popularity was ultimately a detriment to Lobo. Mm-hmm. Where a joke character had to become a like a character that had to carry a title.
Steve Orlando is doing some pretty good stuff with Lobo in Justice League America, or was.
Well, I think it took, you know, 20 some years. Actually, Lobo is exactly as old as me. Lobo was also born in June 1983.
You share a birthday with Lobo.
I do. But it took like 20 some years to like figure out the right setting on the dial for Lobo. Mm-hmm. Of like, because a lot of times Lobo is turned up way too high. And it makes him grating as a character.
Yes.
And even like when he's intended to be funny, a lot of times that setting is turned up way too high.
I think the way that you know if you're reading a Lobo story that's worth reading, honestly, is if Lobo talks about how much he loves dolphins.
Sure, yeah.
Because that's basically it.
Who is Lobo supposed to be a parody of?
I mean, he's not originally a parody of anyone, right? Like, he kind of becomes a Wolverine parody.
Yeah.
But he's not originally a parody of anyone. He's just originally, like, the Keith Giffen Lobo is just, like, you know, a weird outer space bounty hunter with a weird face.
Yeah. Who wears...
cool eyes.
Who wears, like, orange and purple clothes.
Yeah.
And then he becomes sort of like a Wolverine figure with the cigar and the fake comic cursing and all that stuff.
You bastard.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Bite Me fanboy jacket, it's so much. It's like, okay, everybody who does Judge Dredd gets the joke. Maybe like 70% of Lobo people get the joke.
That seems about right. So is Lobo in the neighborhood we were looking in before, or is he lower, or where is Lobo?
I mean, I like him in Justice League.
Better or worse than Blade?
Comics Blade? Worse.
Comics Blade
is my feeling.
Comics Blade is worse than Lobo?
Comics Blade is worse than Lobo. Like, there are comic stories with Lobo that I enjoy. Like, I'm not waiting for him to do Lobo right, you know?
Well, I would have to say that Starfire is probably better than Lobo.
Starfire is very comparable to Lobo.
They're both characters that, like, when done right can be good, but, like, have been done very wrong.
The weird thing is, like, here's what we don't have for Lobo that we do have for Starfire. We kind of have a platonic ideal of Starfire, right?
But like, we have seen what it looks like when...
Yeah. We've seen what it looks like when Starfire is as good as Starfire is going to be.
Yeah, that's fair.
We haven't really... I mean, we've kind of seen that. Like I said, he's good in Justice League, but like...
He's also good on Superman the Animated Series. But
he's okay.
He's okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's okay. Like, at best, Lobo is like a good part of a team. On his own, the best he's going to be is okay.
So below or above Starfire?
Here's exactly where I'm looking. Where is Starfire? What number is Starfire on this list?
Two spots above Blade.
Here's exactly where I'm looking for Lobo. Zariel.
Okay.
Because Zariel, I'm not like super interested in seeing Zariel carry a solo book, right? Zariel also good in Justice League. He's a good Justice League character. If somebody was like, hey man, Zariel's coming back for a solo series, would you be like, eh? I don't know. Because I think I would. I don't know. Zariel's actually pretty good.
I would be curious. If somebody was like, Zariel's coming back for a solo series, I'd be like, I got to see what that is. If somebody was like, Lobo's got another solo series, I'd be like, okay. And I probably would
read it. I think the thing here is, there's no way that Lobo outranks Stegron the Dinosaur Man.
Yeah, I mean, this is a saturation question more than a character being interesting question, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Not as good as Mr. Mix's Pitlick. I'm going to tell you exactly where he goes. I'm going to tell you exactly where this dude goes.
Hit me.
He goes between Aquaman and Sinestro.
All right, perfect.
Yeah, because he's not as good as Comet the Super Horse or Kite Man, but he's also not as bad as Sinestro, and Master Pandemonium is just a guy we think is hilarious.
Yeah.
Lobo enters the list at number 237.
Next up, get ready, strap in. We got Grifter, Cole Cash.
Talk about Cole Cash? Talk about Max's bro? Talk about the human who was so good with guns they let him fight with superpowered aliens?
I'm talking about a founding member of the Wildcats.
The Wild what now?
C-A-T-S.
Right, the covert action team.
That's them.
Was the greatest moment in comics of, like, 2016 when Warren Ellis wrote, "We've got a covert action team that's unauthorized. It's a Wildcat." Here's an honest question for you. There's no right or wrong answer to this. I mean, there is a right answer, and I'm curious to what you think it is. Does Wildcats rule, or does Wildcats suck?
I think it both rules and sucks at the same time.
Yeah, because it's definitely like one or the other.
Yeah. But I think the best example of that is the character of Grifter,
mm-hmm.
who is both cool and stupid as shit at the same time.
Yeah, because he's a con man, but he's also a dude in a mask who shoots people.
But his mask just kind of hangs loose. It's like a bandana. He just puts like a bandana over his face.
Yeah, man, it's a bandana mask, which that shit was hot fire in 1992, but did not ever make like a real comeback. Like, people don't wear bandana masks anymore, and I don't know why. I think it's very sad.
Except for Grifter, who still wears that shit.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't you?
Fair.
If you were Cole Cash the Grifter?
I mean, it would be my thing. I'd be like, I can't change it. It's my thing.
Here's what's great about Grifter. Genuinely, I mean this in the best way possible. There's a shittier version of him in comics. Because there's his brother, Max, whose code name is Condition Red, which is an even worse code name. And that's a fucking Alan Moore character.
Yeah.
Alan Moore was like, hey, what's dumb about Grifter? Can I make it dumber? Extremely good comics.
You know what I never noticed before?
The Grifter wears a trench coat with the sleeves rolled up.
No, I knew that. I never noticed this before now, and I don't know exactly why. I don't know why it never occurred to me.
Okay.
If you tightened Grifter's mask where it wasn't just a hanging bandana, it would be Deadpool's mask.
It would be Deadpool's mask. Yes.
Boy, oh boy.
Boy, oh boy. They got invisible powers, Matt. Where are we putting Grifter? I think we're scrolling up a little bit, because I'll be straight up with you right now, always and forever. Comics Grifter is better than Comics Blade.
Okay. I just, like, where's the part of our list that's, like, extremely dumb, but somehow kind of good at the same time? Badrock? Is he better than Badrock?
No, he's not better than Badrock.
So
that means we have to ask ourselves, is Grifter better than Gwen Stacy?
No, the answer's no. What about some of the Transformers we have on here?
I think he goes right above Blade.
Right above Blade. So be it.
I think he kind of has to, yeah. Because he's not a little guy who's inside a big guy.
That's true.
Oh, I can't wait till Condition Red gets on this list. Number 211 is Cole Cash the Grifter.
All right.
Of the Wild Covert Action Team.
Finally here on Matt's list is Gambit, Remy LeBeau.
Oh, scroll the fuck up. Who do we have at number 100 right now?
Who we have?
Green Arrow? Yeah, Gambit's better than that dude.
All right. Is he better than Michelangelo?
Here's the weird thing. I don't think he's better than Michelangelo. I do think he's better than Ninjak. But, like, Ninjak's higher than Michelangelo.
Yeah.
This list is a mystery.
I don't know. We decided to split the difference between those two turtles and put Ninjak in there.
We had to break up those turtles. And, like, Ninjak's great. He's what if Batman was James Bond. Grifter is what if Grifter. Or no, not Grifter. Gambit. I fucked up my hilarious joke.
Oh, boy. I think we're recharging before number 400 is what we're doing this week.
This is nothing good ever happens in the issue before the anniversary. Yeah, I think we got to put him right at number 100. No questions asked. Gambit. That's Rembrandt, Remy LeBeau. Some people don't know his first name is Rembrandt, but it is.
It's your Etienne. Etienne. That's his middle name.
Rembrandt Etienne LeBeau.
La Diable Blanc.
Of the Thieves Guild. Oh, if you want pure joy in audio form, go watch the episode of X-Men the Animated Series called The Tithe. A guy comes up because, Remy, they got your brother. And he goes, they don't want him. They want you. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Awful voice acting.
Oh, okay. Matt Jerns, thank you for sending in that list. Here is a list from Kevin Walker. The theme for this list is cartoon adventurers and their shitty cousins.
Okay, interesting.
Plus one bonus top shooter.
Okay.
Here we go. We're starting with Phone Bone from Bone.
Ooh. Phone Bone's pretty good.
Phone Bone's pretty good.
He's not like, are we going to rank all the bones? Is that what we're going to do?
This is not all the bones.
Okay.
It's cartoon adventures and their shitty cousins, if you can suss out what might be coming from that.
Because Phone Bone's not the best.
Well, Phone Bone has that protagonist thing going on.
Yeah. He's good. But, like, I feel like Phony Bone is the best. He's like the... He's the most, like, frustrating of them, for sure. But, you know what I mean? Like,
as we have said many times on this segment, a protagonist has to be a little bit boring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why we have, you know, Aerosmith where he is on the list. It's something we talked about when we talked about Charlie Brown. Even though Charlie Brown is I think one of the higher ranking, like, you know, center of the story protagonists that we have, mm-hmm. who's not a superhero.
Well, Charlie Brown is also like depression in human form. So
true. Phone Bone certainly falls into that category as well.
Yeah. He's good, but I think he has that. He definitely has that thing of like things happen to him.
I mean, it's Teodor versus Ray.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm going to say he's not as good as, like... Is he as good as the Atom? To Ray Palmer?
I feel like that's comparable. I feel like that's a good place to start. I mean, the place we have to start, I think, is Charlie Brown, and I think he's probably below.
I think he's certainly below Charlie Brown. Not to be confused with the other character we have on this list named Charles Brown, who is, of course, Kite Man. Hell yeah.
I think you've pinpointed a good place to start with the Atom.
The Atom does go through a little portal in time that only he can go through because it's only about a foot wide. That's pretty good.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
He's not as good as Valkyrie, I don't think. I think he's better than Man-Thing, though, right? Probably?
It could be argued... I mean, is he better than Excalibur or Dr. Aphra?
He's done, like, he's in more comics than both of them.
Okay.
Like, and Dr. Aphra's been in a grip of comics, but, you know, Bone was 60 issues
yeah.
that are largely about him.
Okay, well then, I think we're asking whether Phone Bone is better or worse than Desaad.
No, Desaad's great.
All right, then Phone Bone, I believe, is going to end up going between Desaad and Man-Thing.
Number 132, Phone Bone from Jeff Smith's Bone.
All right, well, we're talking about cousins. Second on the list, Fonsible P. Phony Bone from Bone.
Oh boy, Phony Bone, he's a troublemaker.
Phony Bone is the Ray Smuckles.
Phony Bone got him run out of town.
Yes.
Phony Bone is literally, quite literally, the inciting incident of that comic is him.
Yeah, he's the guy. He's the one.
Yeah, he's the reason it happens.
Here's why I love Phony Bone. Yes. I have a particular personal affinity for any character who's obsessed with get-rich-quick schemes.
You do love that. That is, if I was going to like write a list of things you're into, you do love characters who want to get rich quick.
Like, they will fall for the most obvious garbage bullshit scheme.
Which is he not only is the inciting incident of the comic, he continues in a lot of ways to be the engine that drives that comic. Like, every time you think things are going to calm down, he fucks it up.
Yeah, like we talk about protagonists often being reactive. That means some other character has to be proactive, whether it's a villain or some like character in their orbit who, if is not a villain, is at least chaotic, right?
Yeah.
And Phony Bone is that chaotic character.
Yes. Because here's the thing. Here's how you know that he's a more interesting character than Phony Bone or Phone Bone. They look the exact same, but Phony has a shirt with a star on it.
Yeah.
He's like literally visually more interesting.
Yeah. That's it. There you go.
Yeah, man, he's a real garbage man.
We're saying Phony goes above Phone. How much further?
We have Ray Smuckles pretty high.
I don't think he's up there with Ray Smuckles.
He's not up there with Ray. But I think we can start maybe working down from... Like, Bone's really good is the thing. Is he better than Dr. Dinosaur?
Dr. Dinosaur is actually something that I immediately gravitated toward as well. I think, yes, I think he's a more complex character than Dr. Dinosaur.
Certainly.
And also more complex than Fin Fang Foom. When you start talking about Jaime Reyes and Monica Rambeau and Hercules.
Well, Jaime Reyes just wants to be a dentist because they make good money.
Look, he's got achievable goals.
Yeah, he does not want to get rich quick. He like literally wants to be a dentist.
Yes. Is this where he goes? In here?
I mean, like, is he top 100 material? He's really good.
I think so. I mean, I think he, like, we've already determined he probably goes above Dr. Dinosaur.
Yeah. Hey, if you've forgotten because people haven't talked about it in a while, Bone's really good.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great comic. Okay, let's decide now, above or below Blue Beetle, Jaime Reyes.
Below Blue Beetle. I think.
Okay, then I think right below Jaime Reyes, right above Fin Fang Foom.
Yeah, Phony Bone and at number 95. That's Fonsible. Fonsible P-Bone.
P-Bone, yes. Next on Kevin's list is Donald. Fauntleroy.
Oh, shit.
Duck.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Donald Duck rules. Okay. Are we going to have a character that I'm going to have to rank like super fucking high in a minute?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, then that's where... Okay.
Okay, however, we have already ranked Donald Duck.
Yeah, he's extremely choice.
He's at number 29 on the list currently.
Yeah, he's good as hell.
So, even now that we have ranked Donald Duck, number 4 on Kevin's list is Gladstone Gander from various Disney comics.
Gladstone Gander is the best idea for a villain in that type of story. He's the anti-Peter Parker.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the character who everything goes his way.
Yeah. Always. Inevitably. Unless he tries. He literally can't try or else it won't work. Which is... so fucking brilliant. I don't even, like, I can't even express the genius of that idea.
Like, Gladstone Gander has superpowers.
Yeah.
He has luck superpowers.
Yeah, he's brilliant. He's amazing.
I mean, he's not better than Donald, though.
He's not better than Donald, but, like, we have talked about high concept characters.
Yeah.
There are... very few high concept characters that are as pure genius high concept as Donald Duck's unbearable rich cousin who is lucky in everything, but he can't work. Because if he works, he'll fail.
Yeah.
So he's literally forced to be effortlessly lucky in a very infuriating way.
He's forced to be a lazy dilettante.
Yeah.
Who doesn't do anything of value.
Yeah. Whereas Donald, by nature, is the character who always tries and can, by his nature, never have it work out.
Yeah.
Like, Donald Duck is the Peter Parker.
Oh, for sure. Yes, absolutely. Okay, where does Gladstone go on the list?
Oh, he's good.
He's good. I don't know that he's good. I don't know that he's top 100 good. He's a great high concept.
Great high concept.
He's a great foil for Donald.
He's as good as Volstagg.
Okay, good as Volstagg, I can go with. That would put him above Storm Shadow, though.
Here's the thing. We've got characters in here. Volstagg, Storm Shadow, Paul Crocker. Those are only characters who work in the context of another character. Like, Paul Crocker's good, but like, we don't really care about him when Tara Chase isn't around.
I disagree. Crocker is the star of that Declassified series that's fucking great.
Yes, it is. But the reason you care about him is because Tara Chase was around in these stories that introduce him.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Like, Storm Shadow, cool as shit. But we don't care about Storm Shadow as much if we don't have Snake Eyes. You know?
That's true.
Like, Volstagg is great, but he's in the orbit of another character. So I feel like Gladstone Gander is probably like somewhere in like the 125 to 150 range. Yeah. Is he better than Hobbs?
Yeah.
The Tiger.
For me personally, yes.
I think he's better than Danny the Street. I don't know if he's as good as Dr. Aphra, who's very, very good.
Yeah.
But I think he's probably better than Nick Fury Jr.
All right.
Marcus Johnson.
Then let's put Gladstone Gander between Dr. Aphra and Nick Fury Jr. That's going to put him at number 137 on the list. Here we go. Number 5, Kevin's list. Uncle. Scrooge. McDuck. The Glasgow Kid. The King of the Klondike.
The Terror of the Transvaal.
The Richest Duck in the World. The Last of the Clan McDuck.
Is he number one?
No.
You don't think he's number one?
No. But I think he might be in the top 10. I think he
might be in the top 3. You would have... Okay, here's our top 10. Counting down. Jimmy Olsen, The Joker, Wally West the Flash, Lois Lane, Ben Grimm the Thing, Steve Rogers Captain America, Superman, Victor Von Doom, Bruce Wayne, and Peter Parker. He's better than at least half of those.
Okay. I'm going to talk you out of top 3 and talk you into top 5.
Okay. So you would be saying, your argument is that we should put him below Superman, above Captain America.
Yes.
I mean, that's a respectable position.
Because Superman is the superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Everything flows from him. Scrooge is the perfect distillation of a certain type of adventure character. Much like Captain America is the perfect distillation of a certain type of, you know, patriotic hero.
Mm-hmm.
But arguably, the adventure characters are more important than the patriotic heroes. Captain America is still cool as a patriotic hero through some long process of history and grandfathering, right? Scrooge McDuck is great because of just great fucking Scrooge McDuck stories for 30 years, 40 years, whatever. Really longer than that, but...
Yeah, it's about, like, 60 to 70 years.
Yeah.
But yes.
I'm talking about, like, inclusive of when those stories were coming out. Even though I guess Scrooge McDuck stories have been coming out in comics ever, like... In my head, it cuts off around the 90s. But... They've been coming out since then, too.
Oh, I mean, pretty, like, counting, like, the European and Italian stuff, like, pretty unbroken. I mean, Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck was serialized in, like, 96 to 98.
Yeah.
Here's my thing. The thing that we like about a lot of these characters, the thing we like about a Batman, a Benjamin J. Grimm, we talk about adaptability a lot. It's one of the reasons, like, Ben Grimm is so high. Like, he's a great character in his own right, but he's also great because he can be in any kind of story. Scrooge can do anything. He can go to space.
Yeah.
he can do, like, classic, like, pulp adventure stuff. Here's what I think is the only thing that holds him back that you could reasonably convince me could hold him back. Some of the stories are racist.
Well, I mean, Superman appears in stories that are also racist.
As does Captain America.
Yeah. More recently than you would think. Here's the only thing about Scrooge. Here's mm-hmm. the only thing about Scrooge that I would think holds Scrooge back.
Okay.
Scrooge is not particularly relatable. Except when he is.
Except when he is. Here's the brilliance of Scrooge. Here's what Karl Barks figured out. He only works if he grew up poor. Because you can't have... Because there's literally no character. Richie Rich might be the bottom character on this list if we get him. I fucking hate him. Because he is a child who does not understand what money is because he's never had to live without it.
Yeah.
He builds a lemonade stand out of gold bars. Fuck that kid. Scrooge is greedy, but Scrooge is greedy because he grew up with nothing.
Yeah, Scrooge just doesn't want to ever... Because he was poor, he never wants to be poor again.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why a big part of his character is he's constantly worried about money, even though he's got more money than the world.
Yeah. And I also love that Scrooge's story starts with a come-to-Jesus moment, right? Like, the first Scrooge story is Christmas on Bear Mountain.
Yeah.
Where he's a bitter old man living alone, and Donald's like, yeah, that's my fucking Uncle Scrooge. He's a real piece of shit. And then he ends up, like, the nephews make him feel young again, and so he goes out and is, like, goes on adventures.
And
again.
He becomes... an adventure capitalist.
Oh, brilliant.
Which might be the thing that puts Scrooge McDuck in the top five of this list. Like, there's so many clever, amazing, wonderful things about Scrooge McDuck.
He's so very good. Yeah. I think you're probably right about him probably needing to go below Superman. I will agree with you on that. I also absolutely think it is arguable that he could be number one on this list. He's that good a character.
I honestly think you could argue for anybody soon to be 1 through 7 on this list, possibly 1 through 8 to be number one.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be hard to argue Wally West is number one or the Joker is number one, but anybody from Spider-Man through Lois Lane, you could say they deserve to be number one on this list. And you would have good reasons for it.
Yeah. So let's do that. Let's put Scrooge McDuck slide into the list, rounding out the top five. I got to spell it right, though.
You got it. There you go. With the dollar sign, baby.
He invented that shit. Rick Ross stole that from Scrooge McDuck.
All right. We only made it through two lists, but we had to talk about Scrooge McDuck for 15 minutes.
Oh, he's so good.
So that's how that went. If you would like to send us a panel president list, you can do that at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. But considering how slowly we get through these lists, I do not know how long it will take before we get to them. You can also send Every Story Ever lists to that email address. If you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know there. Or if you just want to get in touch, send us a listener question, whatever. That is the place to do it. Also, check out our Tumblr and send us listener questions there. That's at warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Also, check out our website, warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Also, the Every Story Ever list and panel president lists are there. You can find links to the constantly updated Google Docs there on those pages. I don't believe I have updated the lists on the site in quite some time, but there's not really a need to anymore now that we have the Google Docs. So just go read the Google Docs.
Yeah, the only thing the Google Docs don't have is we don't put the show numbers in them, which means I don't have them in there at all. So I know people have been asking about one of those recently, but
we'll do what we can.
Listen to all of them. They're all very good.
Yeah, we'll do what we can. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us online. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net, and you can find links to all my stuff, my comics, my other podcasts, all my social media presences, and my books. I have been asking people, if they have read it, to go review Supreme Villainy on Amazon, because the more reviews that are there, the more attention it gets. So if you have read Supreme Villainy and you would like to review it, please go leave it a review on Amazon. It would help me out greatly. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
They can just head on over to the-isb.com. That is my old blog, which is now my homepage, where you can find links to columns that I write, podcasts that I do, and comics that you can buy online or at your local comic book store. Go over there, get some hot links. I don't have it up yet, but I am doing a new podcast about the Bible. It's called Apocrypals. It's me and Benito reading the Bible, having a lot of fun. We did the Book of Daniel with some of the Apocrypha in there. So if that sounds like a thing you might want to learn about. So if that sounds like something you want to think about, listen to that podcast.
If you want to hear about Daniel's multiple trips to lion's dens.
Yeah, you might think there's only one.
Nope.
There are two.
He spent a lot of time in some lion's dens.
He's always getting up in the lion's den.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for War Rocket Ajax number 399. We will be back next week with number 400. Let us know what kind of causes you would like us to talk about here at the end of the show. We haven't gotten any suggestions for causes, charities, good things for people to donate to in a while. So please hit us up with any good causes that you would like us to give a shout out to here on the show.
I do know that Trans Lifeline is currently doing a fundraiser, and that is one we have recommended before and an organization I have donated to. So definitely check that one out if you are looking for a good place to donate some money for a good cause.
Come on back for episode 400 next week. We're going to have a fun time.
We are. Do we have an FFT this time, Matt?
I have some letters coming up on the board, on the big board right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's FFT, HQC, SRANK.
Those are the good numbers coming up on the big board.
Love having this big board in here. It's about time I got one installed. And I finally did it.
All the Patreon money on the big board.
Well, you know, sometimes you just gotta make that big purchase. You gotta spend money to make money, you know what I'm saying?
Have a great week, everybody.
We love you.
Yeah!
For me, all you have to do is go to about. No, goddamn.